And over the last few weeks, we've been talking about the development of dana, or the development of generosity. And what I've been stressing during that time is that giving dana is not just a matter of giving material gifts or giving the gift of life like this, but it's more about developing a state of mind. So that what you're doing when you have the occasion to give dana is actually developing your mind. If you understand it in that way, you can understand it as being part of bhavana or meditation at the same time. With every action that you're doing, you're always changing the way the mind is. So you're either changing it for the better or for the worse. When you're doing the dana, what you're doing is developing generosity in the mind. So you must do it with right intention, right thought, and so on. And also with the understanding that what you're doing is developing your mind. Now, it's the same whether you're developing generosity or you're developing virtue or you're developing any state or quality of the mind. You should do it with understanding of what you're engaged in. So today we're actually going to be talking about sila, which we can translate as virtue, virtuous practices. Now, sila has two aspects to it, which is the first one is varita and the second one is charita. Varita and charita. The first one means restraint and the second one means good practices. Now, one of the most frequent questions we get as monks when lay people come to us is that they want to know if an action that they've done is actually broken the precepts or if they're breaking the precept by acting in a certain way. So in fact, in our tradition, used to be known as Vibhajavada, which is the analysis tradition. And the reason for that is because over the centuries, in the early part of the dispensation or the sasana of the Buddha, they built up many analyses to be able to answer these sorts of questions and to answer questions to do with meditation and so on. So it became known as Vibhajavada, or the teaching about analysis. So also there is an analysis of how the precepts become broken. Now, there are certain factors that are involved in the breaking of a precept. They vary from precept to precept, but the principle is always the same. So with the first precept, the situation is like this. First, there must be a living being. Then second, you must perceive it as being a living being. Third, there's an intention to kill it. Fourth, you make an effort to kill it. And the fifth one is that it actually dies. If those five conditions are fulfilled, then there is a breaking of the precept. If even one of those is not fulfilled, then the precept has not been broken. Okay, so we can look at this and see how it works. Now, there might be a living being, and you might see it as such, but having no intention to kill it, you might do something. It means it entails making an effort, and that creature might die. Okay? Because there's no intention, in actual fact, there's no breaking of the precept. Otherwise, there might be a living being. You might perceive it as such. You might have an intention to kill it. You might even make an effort, but it may not die through the effort made, in which case, again, there's no breaking of the precept. There may be no living being, but you might perceive it as such. And an example of this is, you know, when you're walking through a wood at night and you might see a stick on the floor or a rope on the floor and you think it's a snake. Okay, so you perceive a living being, you make an effort, you have an intention to kill, and then you make an effort. Of course, because it's not a living being, it doesn't die. But then there again, you see, there's no breaking of the precept. So there's many variations, but for the precept to be broken, all five factors actually have to be brought together at the same time. Okay, another variation of that is there's a living being, you perceive it as such, you intend to kill it, and it does die. Okay, But you made no effort. You didn't actually, although you had the intention, you didn't carry out the intention. Right? So again, there's no breaking of the precept when this is involved. This is important because sometimes people have bad mental states and come upon them, and they wish for the death of other people or the death of other creatures, and those creatures actually do die, or those people actually do die, and then they start feeling guilty about it. But in actual fact, they make no effort to hurt the other creature or to hurt the other person. Still that person died, but it's not their fault, and it doesn't break the precept. Okay, now all the five precepts, just thinking of the five precepts for the moment, but the five precepts can all be analysed in a similar way. We won't go into it today because it's not necessary, and you can understand the principles that are involved anyway. So it's understanding the principles that's important. That way, when you're in doubt, you yourself can look at your action and you can understand whether you've broken the precept or not. Well, as long as you understand how it's analysed and what factors need to be fulfilled for the precept to be broken. If you don't understand it, then you will be in doubt, and you may not understand one way or another. And doubt is actually a hindrance. It's a hindrance to the development of the spiritual life. So then, you first of all, you've done something that you might be doubtful about, and then it plagues you over the next, you know, few days or few weeks or few years or whatever it is, you see, and that's also a bad mental state. But if you can analyze it properly, you can understand it properly, then you can put that doubt aside and you can get on knowing you've either done something wrong and you need to make amends for it, or you've not done something wrong and you can just carry on living your life in a normal and happy way. Now, all of this pertains to restraint, to the Bharata side of virtuous practice. But as you can see, even if your Bharata is okay, that means even if your restraint is okay, still you could be producing bad mental states. Like, you might have an intention to kill, you might not carry it out, but that intention is also a bad mental state. So this is only half of the story. Unfortunately, sila is often reduced to just being restraining from doing bad actions. But in the suttas, it's never explained like that. It's always explained in the two ways as being both restraint and good practices. Now, in the discourses, it says that he keeps the precept, but afterwards he puts aside the sword and the stick and dwells with a heart wishing for the benefit and having compassion for all living beings. So this is the other side of it. It's not just a matter of being restrained from hurting other living beings, is being actively involved in seeking the benefit of other beings and having compassion on other living creatures as well. So that brings the other side into focus when we understand that to fulfill sila in a proper and a real manner, a meaningful manner, then we actually have to engage in good practices as well for the welfare and for the benefit of other living beings. Okay, so all the five precepts have their opposite qualities. The opposite quality of wishing harm to other living beings is wishing for their welfare, of course. But it means that you have to make an actual physical, vocal, mental effort to help other living beings in whatever way it's possible to do that. Not just refrain from hurting them, but to actively engage in their welfare as well. So it can be done, of course, in many different ways. You know, if you have the welfare of other living creatures at heart, it might entail, you know, giving help to people who are in need. It might entail going to hospitals and helping people in the hospitals, or making sure that they're comfortable. There's various ways that you can engage in these practices. The important thing is that you develop both sides of it, both the restraint and the good practices. Okay, now as I said, these apply to all the precepts. I'll explain the other precepts if we get an occasion. I'll explain how it pertains, how you can analyze the other four precepts, and how you can bring them through to fulfillment through the charita aspect of the sila. But the important thing is to learn that there's an analysis of the precept so that you can know whether you've broken it or not, and to understand that to fulfill the virtuous practice, it also implies not only restraint, but that you are actually doing something for the benefit of others as well, or for the benefit of other creatures as well. So we'll leave it at that for today. So everybody say sadhu.
Sadhu.